What is going on, everybody? Friday. Maybe you're listening to this on Saturday. We got NFL games Saturday. We got NFL games Sunday. We got NFL games a game Monday night. Big one. Packers at Minnesota. The problem is, as I'm recording this late, you know, about dinner time Thursday, there's no NFL game on. And I'm one of the rare millennials, according to the ratings, that likes the NBA. This Laker-Bucks game, that's the problem for the NBA. Your games in December don't matter. This game is meaningless. I miss the NFL. Roger Goodell, if you're listening, I doubt you are, but give us Thursday night games. You just don't take those away from us. You know, it's funny. Everyone crushed the Thursday night game back when they first became a norm. When I first got to the NFL in 2010, there were like three or four a year. Maybe there were five. Now, obviously, every team has one, but they're missed. The country rallies around them. They consume them at historic numbers because the ratings are really high. We need football in our life, and I need the NFL in my life on Thursday night. Now, I get December 19th. You know, some of these teams haven't had a bye for a while. It would be tough. So, you know, I'll tip my hat. You give me three Saturday games, and really two of them are really good. Yeah, you could argue the first one, Houston at Tampa, is not bad. I got a lot going on today. I'm going to start with Tom Coughlin and the Jaguars. Then we'll dive into Dabo and what he did during recruiting. You know, he's kind of turned Clemson into what USC was 15 years ago. The fun, cool place to be. It's just, it was easy to understand why people wanted to go to LA with Pete Carroll. Hollywood, agents, money, glamour, women. Clemson, what he's doing is, it's pretty unprecedented. Because, you know, Ohio State, Bama, Florida, those schools, the Michigans of the world, even USC, the history, Clemson, to be this good and this dominant and this cool, it's pretty crazy. Then we'll dive into all the weekend games. And, of course, at John Middlecoff is my Instagram handle. And you can slide into my DMs, Middlecoff Mailbag, at the end of the show. Easiest way to get a hold of me is Instagram or Twitter. Same Twitter handle, but my DMs aren't open there. Only for the babes and media people. But let's start with Tom Coughlin. He was relieved of his duties the other night. And I've been trying to think of some analogies to sum this up. I don't even know how to quite describe what he was attempting to do. When you're the head coach, you're basically, you know, the disciplinarian of the family. You know, I grew up in a two-parent household, but my dad worked a lot, whatever, was gone on business. And I just remember being in trouble. You know, my mom would be like, when your dad gets home, well, if he's going to be gone for a week, you're like, you know, whatever, I'm going to get in trouble for a while. So you'd push the envelope. Now you'd call. Back then, you didn't have cell phones. Pick up the phone, you know, he'd be like, are you being good? And you'd pretend, yeah, being good, even though you knew you were screwed when he got home. But ultimately, he was the guy to get you in trouble. You know, now your mom could come at you with a spoon or something if she was pretty freaked out. And again, I was a bad guy. Bad guy'd be strong. I was a troublemaking kid. I like to push the envelope. Like, no different than a lot of NFL players, I'm sure, right? You know, I can show up 5 minutes late for rehab. And Tom Coughlin, a stickler for details. To me, what Tom Coughlin stands for are the right things. Being on time. Like, isn't that one of the most basic premises of being successful in life? If you just show up, you're ahead of, like, whatever the stats are, 80, 90% of your competition. Just showing up. You just wipe people out. And that's Tom Coughlin takes that to a whole nother level. It's not just showing up. You got to show up on time. No, not actually on time. You got to show up early. Which, again, are good habits in any walk of life. Where I think Tom Coughlin jumped the shark is when you're the head coach, you can draw a line in the sand. When you're the dad, you can draw a line in the sand. But if my mom, like, ran over to my neighbor's house and was like, Chuck, I need you to help corral John. You think I'm going to listen to my neighbor? Of course not. So these players looked at Tom Coughlin. Clearly, Jalen Ramsey had no respect for him. Like, yeah, Tom, you've won a couple Super Bowls, but you're now a 71-year-old guy that's technically the GM, president. We don't even quite know what you do. But I answer the head coach and I answer the owner. I'm not really sure what you're doing. And for an old guy that was very rigid, clearly, you would think he'd be a little open-minded, but he wasn't just rigid and closed-minded. He was breaking the rules. He was fining Dante Fowler, reading up on the $700,000 that he fined him for things that you can't even fine him for from January to March when they're not, it's the off season, for not showing up to the facility to conduct his rehab. When the rules you know, specifically state he can do rehab wherever he's at. He does not have to come into the facility. And then Leonard Fournette got $99,000 back for sitting on the bench. Like, Tom, you are not the head coach. You drawing these lines, you created a lot of dissension in the building. What Tom Coughlin did these last, I'd say, 12 months is beyond embarrassing. You know, it won't necessarily be a blemish on his resume, just because as time goes on, you just remember the two Super Bowls. But it should be a blemish on his resume. What he did to himself, I mean, this is like clown activity. This is the type of stuff that Al Davis with the the transparency, the overhead projector, or something that Jimmy Haslam and Joe Banner, you know, or something would have done in Cleveland 4 or 5 years ago. That's the level of just people around the league laughing. Are you kidding me? And then for the NFLPA to put out a statement that basically saying, we would recommend you thinking twice before you play here. He left Shad Khan no choice but to fire the old guy. And I'm not anti-old people. Though, when you conduct yourself like this, I can imagine it was very, very difficult for Tom to be a general manager slash whatever the hell his, you know, actual role was. I've heard he had a lot of power. And he was living just in archaic times. One of the big reasons I've heard Leonard Fournette is on that team is he led the charge. A between the tackles, running downhill running back. Think about drafting a guy like that in the top five in the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, it was jaw-dropping when he did it. Now, I didn't love McCaffrey as high as the Panthers drafted him, but at least you could understand what he brought to the table, catching the football. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott is a much more balanced player than Leonard Fournette when it comes to all the aspects of the position. So, it's hard for me to wrap my head around Tom Coughlin and the fines that he was giving out to players that he was legally not allowed to do it. And the owner deserves some criticism for this too. You hired this guy, why? Because he was a big name. A classic move that owners make. Oh, he's Tom Coughlin, he's won Super Bowls. But you didn't really have a position for him. You already had a general manager and you weren't hiring him to be your coach. What the hell was he going to do? But at his core, it's hard. What's the saying? You don't teach old dogs new tricks. At 71, 72 years old, Tom Coughlin was not going to change. But his authority in that building not being the head coach, and that is who the players answer to, yet they know this guy is pushing these agendas, just caused problems. Because you watched the Jaguars the last couple years, you went, wow, they have a lot of talent. Clearly the dysfunction was at an all-time high. And Tom Coughlin was a big, big reason for that. I blame Tom Coughlin now when you see these things coming out, when you see these grievances being overturned, and then you see players all around the NFL. And people think I'm just like Mr. Pro Management. No, I'm just pro the right, what's right and what's wrong. And usually I'm pro management because I'm pro fan. I'm pro the sport. And usually when players just go all over the place, NBA style, or have a bunch of power, it doesn't work. And your business suffers. So I think the balance of the NBA, the NFL, tends to be obviously the front office has more power, but some players have some juice. Jalen Ramsey had some juice. The good players in any sport are always going to have some juice, but I'm just pro doing the right thing. What Tom Coughlin was doing was moronic. Like, I'm still baffled at it a couple days later that this happened and that no one inside the Jaguars said anything, though I understand he's a pretty intimidating old guy. But I think the Jaguars have a legitimate, you know, public relations problem on their hand right now, and getting rid of Tom helps. But overall, they got to show everyone that this is a place that's pro player, that's pro. And pro player is the wrong word, but just pro. We're not out to get you. And it felt like Tom Coughlin, like this was the Wild Wild West. He was just trying to take out guys. You know, remember what Jalen Ramsey? His issue, everything that came out publicly, was with Tom Coughlin. Why is Tom Coughlin involved with Jalen Ramsey? Like, stay away. Most general managers are out of sight, out of mind. Even in the building. I'm not saying you can't have friendly relations with players, but they shouldn't be intimidated by you. That, if anything, that's the coach's job. So if you're a player, you're intimidated by the coaching staff because they're on you, they're holding you to high standards, they're pushing you, and you're worried about this old guy potentially finding you, screaming at you. What a dysfunctional mess. And what just What a bad look for Tom Coughlin. There really is no way around it. Like, I didn't view, when he left New York, it was time, but he left with his head held high. He had a very respectable career. He's going out a legend. Won as many Super Bowls there. I mean, Parcells won two. He won two. So he's right there with Bill Parcells in terms of Super Bowl rings with the New York Giants. It was a really big deal. He beat Belichick twice. I would say he's one of the more respected guys in the league. I remember going to the Combine when I was an intern. The young guys had to get there really early at the weigh-ins. And I remember getting there at like 6 a.m. and he was already sitting there. And it was like, this guy's a beast. You know, I always held him in such high regard. I lost some respect for him over this. I really did. Like, have a feel for the room. You know, and for as smart and as tough as certain guys can be, they also can be dumb sometimes. And this is a very bad look for for Tom Coughlin. And you give the owner some credit, but he also created this mess by hiring him to some fake position. And then he created all this divisiveness within the organization. So hopefully they can move on, but just what a disaster. I don't pretend to know that much about recruiting beside just a couple of the super famous guys, a couple of the five-star guys, you know, a couple of the kids. Whenever, you know, Barry Sanders' kids year ago, you know, 4 or 5 years ago went to Stanford, Emmett Smith's kid this year, I think Ojo Cinco's kid, Jerry Rice's kid were all recruited. That's kind of cool to see. Even though Jerry Rice is a lot older than Ojo Cinco. But one thing that really jumped out to me in recruiting is that Dabo Swinney is the new Pete Carroll. But the difference is that Pete Carroll took over one of the more historic programs that was just down in USC. And when you take over a historic program that's quote-unquote down, it's not that hard to get it kickstarted. Ohio State, Michigan, Bama, LSU. Like, if you do it right, you can go from, you know, driving a solid car to a Ferrari quickly, and you never look back. And that's what Pete Carroll did. That's what, you know, Saban did at Alabama. That's what when Urban got to Ohio State, took it to another level. Same thing when Urban got to Florida. Like, you can flip a switch because you don't have to go that far. The book Good to Great, I'd argue it's harder to go from nothing to good. You know, it's really incredible when you get to a program and create something. You know, like what Bill Snyder did at Kansas State, what the guy's doing at Iowa State, what Mike Leach did at Washington State 2 years ago, most wins in school history. Like, I'm not trying to diminish what Chip Kelly did at Oregon, but I also think it takes away from how good of a program Mike Bellotti had humming there. Now, Chip Kelly took him just another inch up, but they were a damn good program the majority of my life. Like what Bruce Feldman told me one time on a radio interview, that he thought the Jim Harbaugh coaching job at Stanford was the most incredible turnaround job he'd ever seen. It was remarkable. I think when he got the job, they were 1-11. 3 years later, they're beating Pete Carroll and winning, you know, double-digit games going to the BCS. It was remarkable. So Dabo Swinney, Clemson, has historically produced a lot of NFL players. I know a long, long time ago they had won national championships. But for a long time, they kind of felt like an underachieving, like an Arizona State of the South. I looked at their recruits. Obviously, they got a lot of guys from the South, but they stole people from Georgia when Georgia's humming. They went into Alabama when Alabama's humming, but they've become so cool. Maryland, boom, got their best player. Their best overall recruit, who I think is a second and third guy, depending on where you look, is the quarterback from St. John Bosco's in Los Angeles, who's also going to Clemson. Now, a big reason that a lot of these Southern schools, I think, are coming into L.A. and having success is because USC's down. And Oregon only has so many spots. I tip my hat to Mario. He's the only guy out West recruiting like it's the SEC. Herm's trying, and same with Washington. But Dabo Swinney, when you think of college football coaches, the best ones, kind of assholes, right? I mean, Nick Saban, you know, he's kind of a dick. Even Urban Meyer, like, he's an intense dude. Think of like what Jimmy Johnson was in his prime, or, you know, even Bob Stoops, you know, pretty intense guys. And I'm not saying Dabo or Pete are not intense, because clearly they are at the highest level. They're also pretty happy guys. They're also pretty optimistic guys that you feel like you would want to be around at all times. Like, would you want to spend that much time around Nick Saban? I mean, you would if you were a football coach to steal his ideas. He would also wear you out. Just kind of some of his negativity and intensity. There's a difference between Dabo and Pete's intensity, which is all positive. And what Dabo's done at Clemson is absolutely amazing. For Clemson to have the number one recruiting class, they've won two of the last three national championships. I actually think they're a sleeper to win this national championship. I like them to beat Ohio State in that first round game. But then to him to go to areas like Alabama when the Crimson Tide are humming, to go to Georgia and out-recruit the University of Georgia when they have been consistently a top 10 program these last two or three years. He goes into Maryland like it's no big deal, and then he comes out to California and gets the top guy in the state of California. Again, it feels very, very Pete Carroll right now. Dude went all over the country with his positive vibe, his cool vibe. I keep hearing that Dave Tepper is going to want Josh McDaniels. If you're Dave Tepper, how would you not talk to this guy? How does he not feel like Pete Carroll or Jimmy Johnson? How could you look? Now, I understand that Pete had NFL experience, so it was a little different. But Jimmy Johnson's a guy that took Miami to a whole nother level. Jerry hired him, and he never looked back. And Dabo has, like, would Dabo work in California? He's perfect for the South. You know, there is and I'm not pro or anti-religion or anything, but talking about God and stuff, we don't really do that out here. It's a big deal in the South. It resonates with your base. So I do think he really, if I was him, I would stay at Clemson. If Bama called, I don't know about, obviously he went to Alabama. Maybe he would go there one day. I personally, if I was him and even wanted to go back to Alabama, I would let someone go to Alabama first, fail, and then come in second. But I would imagine that Dave Tepper's going to call. He'd be crazy. He would be insane if he doesn't try to get an ultra-secret meeting with Dabo Swinney. Now, Dabo makes a ton of money, and rightfully so. He deserves to arguably be the highest-paid coach in college football. He's beaten Saban multiple times. He's recruiting the best players in the country. He has now become a national brand, and part of that social media and the internet and television has really helped these Southern schools. As someone that lives in California, never been to an SEC game, been to Florida a couple times for NFL games, the Dolphins and the Bucks. I've never been to a Saints game, but I've been to New Orleans and Bourbon Street before. So I've been by the Dome, know how cool it is. That the SEC and the South, and I would argue the South, like Miami, when I was a kid, or like in junior high, DJ Williams, he played for the Broncos for a while, but was the number one overall recruit in the country, was at De La Salle. He went to the Miami. So we've always had top guys go to Southern schools. But to come out here and get our number one quarterback? Like USC, and I'll give Oregon credit, they were going after him very, very hard. But it's cool to go to Clemson now. Like, I don't blame that guy from St. John Bosco's to go into Clemson at all. I'd go there too. It's badass. Look at all the sweet players in the NFL. I mean, I'm thinking today, back in the 2000s, like with the Deshauns and Marshawns, and a bunch of guys that came out of California, would they have even lasted? Like, would they have gone to the Pac-12? Or would they have ended up at Alabama? Or would they have ended up at Georgia or Clemson? And it's really remarkable, Dabo being able to rise even while the SEC is crushed. Obviously, Nick Saban crushes it. Najee Harris, one of, you know, starting running backs from 5 minutes away from me. Georgia's getting guys. Georgia's, the top running back they got is from Fresno, California. And Dabo is still, like, finding a way to get the players he wants. It's really remarkable. And I really do think there are a lot of parallels to Pete Carroll. His program is fun to watch. It's become an NFL program. They have the best assistant coaches. They have the best talent. You know, last year, how many first-rounders they had. They're going to have more first-rounders this year. They're going to have a future number one overall quarterback in 2 years. They already got one, Deshaun Watson, who's kicking ass and taking names for the Houston Texans. So you just got to tip your hat. You know, they say a rising tide lifts all boats. Obviously, the SEC has kind of created this competition down there. And Dabo has found a way. I understand, like, it's easier for him to navigate the regular season when you're playing an ACC schedule. But you can't argue the players he's getting. He would easily compete in the SEC. Because we see when he plays Alabama and he beats them. You know, he's beat them twice in the biggest game going. And last year at Levi Stadium, he kicked the crap out of them. What he's doing is just absolutely remarkable. I have nothing but admiration for the guy. And again, if I'm David Tepper, I'm not taking no for an answer. Maybe he won't be my coach, but I'm getting a sit down with the guy. Okay, let's go Sunday games. Actually, we'll start on Saturday. You gotta love the NFL. I guess we got some bowl games, but crappy ones. Houston at Tampa. Listen, Houston's the craziest team in the league. on a given week, they could blow out a good team or they could get smoked by a bad team. You really don't know who's going to show up. You know, I think it's clear that when Kenny Stills on the field to go with Hopkins and Deshaun, Carlos Hyde's actually had a pretty good season. Their offense is really good. Their defense has played a lot better the second half of the season. They were really good, I thought, last week. Tampa, one of those weird bad teams. I don't even know if you can consider them bad anymore. They're 7-7. Who would have thought they were 7-7? They started 3-7. They're getting +3 at home. Godwin's banged up. Evans is out. But Jameis, you know, for all the picks he throws, he does throw a lot of touchdowns. This is one of those weird games. It would not shock me to see Tampa play well. I would lean Houston, but as a gambling man, I would stay away. To me, this is another game I would stay away because Bills at the Patriots. I think we're all thinking take the Bills +6, which is a pretty good bet when you just factor in they got an elite defense and the Patriots offense is a train wreck. Here's the issue, though, just with the game. The Bills barely average over 20 points, and the Patriots have the best scoring defense in the league. How are the Bills, who just really struggled against the Steelers, and the Steelers are good on defense too, but how are they going to win in New England? It's way harder. There's this mythological element to the Patriots too when you factor in the Bills have been in this division forever. I love Sean McDermott. It's kudos to them making the playoffs again. And I love their defense. And Edelman, I saw a clip at practice. He looks terrible. Physically, he's hurt. Patriots can't run the ball. Brady's old. Is he going to leave in free agency? I can't pick against the Patriots till they just prove it to me over and over. So I would lean New England, but 6 points, I think the first game in Buffalo, right, was 16-10. To me, this kind of feels like 23-14 type game, even for maybe 23-10. So I'd probably go New England -6. Game of the night, because it's actually the only game on in the night, Rams at the Niners. In that first game when the Niners played them in L.A., they kicked their ass. Their defense was a lot healthier. Dee Ford played in that game. Dee Ford's not playing in this game. But the Niners coming off a bad loss to the Falcons, I mean, kind of a bad loss. Julio Jones was the guy kicking their ass, and they were missing Richard Sherman. Richard Sherman's back. Their nickel corner, Kwon Williams, is also back. So I actually think the Niners' defense, which has not been that good the last couple weeks, should be a lot better. Just they get Sherman back, who's very important. Bosa's been balling. Buckner, Armstead. The Rams' offensive line is a train wreck. The weird part, though, about this game is the Rams are technically still alive, and because Minnesota doesn't play until Monday night, you got to win this game to just keep your playoff hopes alive. You lose this game, it's over. The Rams have to win the next two. Minnesota has to lose the last two, so if the Rams lose this game, just say bye-bye to the playoffs. So they're going to come out swinging. Now, if the Niners can get an early lead, game's at home. I saw on weather.com, I mean, I live here, but it's supposed to rain, I guess, in Northern California on Saturday night. So, you know, I don't know who necessarily that benefits. The Rams, Todd Gurley's kind of a shell of himself. Their defense, beside last week where they got their ass kicked, has actually been a lot better since they got Jalen Ramsey. I'd probably take the Rams +6.5, but kind of like all three of these games, I think they're just stay away. So this is a hard week to gamble. Jacksonville at Atlanta. Atlanta's sneaky kind of hot. You know, they've won 4 of their last 6 games. Julio Jones is going nuts. Matt Ryan looked good. Jacksonville was begging to get their ass kicked last week, and the Raiders just refused because the Raiders suck even more than the Jaguars, and the refs helped them out a little bit. The Falcons -7.5. Is there a chance if Dan Quinn wins these last couple games, he's going to keep his job if they end up going 7-9? They're 5-9 right now. If they win out, is he keeping his job, or is he a lock to be fired? Because it felt like he was a lock to be fired. I still feel like he's going to get fired, but I would probably remove the word lock. And then with Jacksonville, it feels like everyone's going to get fired. Kind of a shitty deal there. So I would lean the Falcons there. New Orleans at Tennessee. The Saints just need to keep winning because if the Niners, you know, slip up or Seattle slips up, they can get the 1 seed. They have the tiebreaker over Seattle. If the 49ers win out, they would get the 1 seed because they have the tiebreaker over New Orleans. But if New Orleans wins these next 2 games, they're a lock to get a bye. So this game is big. And Tennessee at, what are they, 8? What's their record right now? 8-6? You know, with the Steelers who are playing the Jets, this is borderline must win. Game's at home. Saints coming off a short week. Now, I don't feel good about Tennessee winning this game, but you got to win to even have the final week against Houston in Houston even matter. And if the Steelers were to win, we'll talk about that game next, but bye-bye Tennessee if you lose this game. So there is a lot on the line. Giants at Redskins. Actually, let's talk about this game next because there's nothing to say. Who cares? Even if you're a Giants fan, I would probably boycott watching this. And if you're a Redskins fan, I think you've already boycotted the season. What just a... You might as well just put a dumpster in the at the 50-yard line, throw a bunch of trash in the dumpster, and then just throw some gasoline and then light the thing on fire. Because that's what this game is. A dumpster fire. Redskins, joke. Giants, you could argue a bigger joke because they actually thought they were going to be good. What a debacle. I mean, it's Jay Gruden's already fired. Is Pat Shurmur next, you would think. To me, the question with the New York Giants is Dave Gettleman survive. Steelers at the Jets. Like I said, I mean, this is a big game for the Steelers. They are still in the sixth spot. If they win out, they're in the playoffs. You're playing the Jets, who haven't really played that well since they had that one game against the Raiders when they looked awesome. They've kind of turned back into the Adam Gase Jets. Here's the thing with the Steelers, though, is their offense isn't very good because their quarterback situation, and I'm rooting for Duck Hodges. He's a cool story, but if he's your quarterback, you got some issues. And then the Jets, just too many injuries, just kind of a lost year. Bengals at the Dolphins, the Burrow Bowl. Can we call it the Burrow Bowl? You know, if you're the Bengals, you want no part of winning this game. None. And if you're the Dolphins, they just keep on playing hard. They have three wins right now, I think. I'd have to double check that. But this game actually has a little more intrigue. Like, I crushed the Giants-Redskin game, but I'm kind of giving this love. I don't know if that's fair. But I do appreciate the way the Miami Dolphins, they play. I mean, they play really hard. You have to give Brian Flores a lot of credit. So right now, the Bengals have one win. I guess it because the Dolphins have three, they would still be in the driver's seat because the Redskins and the Giants are right behind them in the draft order, but they play, so someone is going to win that game. That sucks for the Redskins and the Giants. Whoever wins that game is going to screw themselves for draft spots. God, that would... If I was John Mara, I would mandate my team loses. So actually, it doesn't. It's not the Burrow Bowl because the Bengals are... The Bengals are going to get Joe Burrow. And if they lose this game, it's a lock to get Joe Burrow. Unless he denies going there, which I would recommend. The Panthers at the Colts. There's really not much on the line in this game. The Colts season is over after losing just several games in a row. Who would have thought? I mean, I think most of us thought they were going to be really good. T.Y. Hilton got hurt. Jacoby hurt his knee. And then it kind of derailed their season. Now they're 6-8, and they look like they're headed for like a 7-9 season. The Panthers, I thought they'd have a little more life once Ron Rivera was fired, but that hasn't really been the case. And it turns out Kyle Allen just isn't that great of a player. Sorry, I got something in my throat or something. The Ravens at the Browns. I would say the biggest upset so far of the season is the Browns beating the Ravens earlier in the year. And, you know, you come all the way to week 16 and you go, the Browns at home are a 10-point underdog. So that tells you everything to know that's happened since that game. I always just kind of bet against a team. Like, are the Ravens that started 2-2 really going to win 12 straight games and finish 14-2? And I'm not demit. Like, they're awesome. They're the best team in the league right now. They probably have the MVP with Lamar Jackson, and John Harbaugh probably deserves to be the coach of the year. But, you know, if you're them, I don't know if a loss kind of just to refocus everyone. Now, you could argue, John, why do they need to refocus? They're kicking the crap out of everyone. I mean, like, that's fair. The Ravens, they didn't play since last Thursday. The Browns got Jarvis screaming at people. And I don't know how you'd pick against the Ravens in this game. But that's what's weird about late, you know, in the season, NFL games. You know, is this really a rivalry game? I mean, do the Ravens look at the Browns like some rival? Now, is there going to be a little revenge factor because they beat them so early in the season? Or do they even care? They've kicked so much ass and everyone's been blowing them since. Why do they even care about the Browns? So I would probably take the Browns plus 10. Just that's a lot of points. The Browns do have some good players. I just wonder if the Ravens are bound to have just kind of a mental lapse. Because they're clearly a way better team, way better coached, and they just have more cohesion with their talent. But you would just think, if I was on the Ravens, would I say super focused? you know, for a game at Cleveland, I don't even know if I'd care. But then again, I'm recording into a mic and they're playing in the NFL. Lions at the Broncos. I don't have much to say here. A little surprising, I guess, Patricia and Bob Quinn were retained for this next season with the owner basically saying we better make the playoffs or these guys are done. The Broncos, it's weird because in his first two starts, Drew Lock threw five touchdowns. Five touchdowns. He looked like Elway in the one game against the Houston Texans. Came back to earth a little last week against the Kansas City Chiefs, but playing at Arrowhead in the snow, that's a pretty tough environment. You should get your ass kicked. I kind of like the Broncos minus 6.5, especially if they're starting that Blau guy. Raiders at the Chargers, another game I have no feel for. The Raiders are just in shambles. Trent Brown, their star right tackle, IR. Josh Jacobs, not an IR, but he's not playing this week. The Chargers, I would feel very uncomfortable gambling on them, but they do have a lot of good players, and you would think they would expose a backup right tackle and the Raiders missing their best offensive piece. Plus, the Raiders have lost four straight games, and in three of those games they got blown out, and their fourth loss was to the Jacksonville Jaguars. So, I like the Chargers here. Cowboys at the Eagles. I would say this is the marquee game of Sunday with a couple of those good games on Saturday and with Chicago not being that good, so there's not much on the line. Where do we start? The big news of the week is Dak Prescott hasn't practiced. Now, I've been around the NFL and covering it and talking about it long enough to know this is not high school sports. Hell, this isn't college. Not practicing once you're a pro, and especially once you're a veteran, is not that big of a deal. To me, the bigger issue is Amari had a comment that Dak didn't make a throw in the Rams game, and he said something to him in the huddle, and Dak's like, God, something's hurting right now. So is this guy legitimately hurt? Because if Dak Prescott is, let's say, 75%, the Cowboys are no lock to win this game. If the Cowboys has full health, they're just way better than the Eagles because the Eagles are missing a million players. But if you tell me that Dak Prescott is nowhere near 100%, I got this game red flagged. Now, if Dak is 75% and still can make the majority of the throws and Zeke can dominate on the ground, it still should be advantage the Cowboys. Mainly because the Eagles, Alshon's gone, Deshaun's gone, is Lane Johnson's hurt. Like, how many guys can you miss? They're depending on Greg Ward Jr., which, I like Greg Ward. I've watched him the last 3 or 4 weeks. I probably need to text Howie. That guy's a player. But that's depending on a lot in basically a playoff game, and that's what this is. Now, the advantage Philly has is games in Philly, and those people hate the Cowboys. And that place is going to be going apeshit. And Carson Wentz has showed signs of life the last 2 weeks. The problem is, it's taken him elevating his game in the second half against two terrible teams in the Redskins and the Giants for them to win the last two games. So, sometimes winning can band-aid some of your issues. Like, they're not playing that well. And it's not even their fault. They're missing so many players. But, they found this Greg Ward Jr. guy. He's a baller. Miles Sanders finally coming on. Carson getting some of his mojo. Now they get to come home. I mean, trust me, I want to pick Philly so bad in this game, but I just don't see, assuming Dak Prescott is not like 50%, how the Cowboys can't win this game. They just have way more healthy players. They have more impact players that are available. But Doug Peterson, much better coach than Jason. You know, the Jerry Jones, kind of the ghost of him always around, making everyone uncomfortable. I'm rooting for Philly. My heart says Philly, my head says the Cowboys. Arizona at Seattle. I know Arizona just beat down the Browns at home, but I just see no way they're going to go up to the 12s and hang. I would expect. Now, 9.5 is a lot of points, and Arizona can backdoor cover because Kyler makes plays. But if Seattle is legitimately going to win the West and be a one seed, I don't think you just win this game. You win it by 10-plus points. So this should be a statement game for Seattle going into, which I would imagine if the Niners win and Seattle's wins, even though neither team has to win, week 17 for the NFC West will be Sunday Night Football, which is pretty cool. Chiefs at the Bears. Chiefs are humming. Four straight games under 20 points. Their defense is playing great. Got to tip your hat to Spags. Obviously, Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Kelsey, their offense is awesome. If their defense plays well, I think they could easily win the Super Bowl. Here's the thing with the Bears. They're a feisty, average team. And the problem mainly is Trubisky because he's just not very good. He can bitch all he wants, point the finger, Nagy's not calling the right plays. Like, Mitch, we've seen you miss basic throws. I'm talking elementary throws. In the business, we call them layup throws. Just keep your mouth quiet, buddy. Just sit this one out. When someone asks you your opinion on stuff and anything relates to the coach or any of the play calling, even if you disagree, just keep that one in house. You have negative equity right now. And I hope Ryan Pace doesn't pick up his fifth-year option and moves on from him. Not because everything I've heard about Mitch, he's a great guy. He's just not a good enough player. It's just that simple. Now, where I get nervous is Ryan Pace drafted this guy number 2 overall. He traded up for 3. And he traded a 3rd and 4th round pick to move up one spot. And he didn't just move up one spot. He passed on 2 guys. I don't know if you've noticed. Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes. Turned out to be pretty good players. And one was acquired by Andy, and the other was Bill O'Brien, and those guys go to the playoffs every year with those 2 guys. So Ryan Pace, is he going to be willing to admit how wrong he was, even though we all on the outside know how wrong he was? We see it all the time. It's hard for general managers to admit defeat. So I would guess, as crazy as it sounds, that they pick up his fifth-year option. I hope they don't. I'm a Bears fan, so I'm rooting for them not. And this is, I don't have any inside information. I don't know Ryan Pace. But I think it's going to be very difficult for him not to pick up the fifth-year option on his quarterback, though it's the right move. I like the Chiefs in this game, but if I was gambling, I'd take the under. It's probably going to be freezing cold. KC's defense is playing well. Obviously, Chicago's defense is solid. And should be a decent Sunday night game. Okay, let's do a couple middle-cuff mailbag questions. I'm going to bang out a couple. Keep it short. You know, get you ready for the holidays. I guess we got the holidays, Christmas and everything's next week, so we'll figure out next week's schedule. I haven't really thought about that yet, but probably just keep on humming, you know. No, as Belichick would say, no days off. First question, do you think Jonathan Taylor will go in the first round? He had an amazing career running the ball, but needs to catch the ball better. Running backs don't go in the first round often. I haven't studied him besides just watching him on television, so I can't speak to, I don't know, is that the knock that he doesn't catch the ball well? I know watching him in that conference championship game against Ohio State, he had one run that was just like, he had a first-round run. And I've seen him enough to know he's a first-round type runner in terms of physicality. He can run inside, he can run outside, he can break tackles. Probably the one knock would be elite top-end speed. But to me, there's some Saquon Barkley of just an absolute playmaker with the ball in his hands. But yeah, I mean, I would guess, if I had to guess right now, not really, I wouldn't even say it's an educated guess because I haven't texted around. I haven't really studied him because you got to catch the ball. To me, in 2020, a running back is not going in the first round if they can't catch the ball. They got to be Zeke. They got to be McCaffrey. The days of Leonard Fournette types going in the first round are done. You know, I personally wouldn't take one in the first round, but if you can get Jonathan Taylor in the second round, be like getting Nick Chubb in the second round. So my guess, uneducated guess right now, second round. From what I've seen of him, though, I'm a huge fan. The dude's a baller. Niners fan from Palo Alto, but living in Vegas. Sin City, baby. Been watching the Raiders stadium progress. I'm not too sure the stadium is going to be done in time. Lot to be done. Wouldn't shock me if they dropped the ball on this, too. Ha. So I guess not even middle golf mailbag question. Yeah, I mean, there's a reason the Raiders got a lease for next year at the Coliseum. To think they are some lock to be there next year, it's just not a fact. The Raiders are always behind. They're always struggling to get things done. Could it be done? Sure. Could it not? Yeah. I mean, it's on the table. I heard Kevin Clark for The Ringer. He's awesome. NFL follow. Follow him on Twitter. He was on Russillo's podcast, and I think Ryan wasn't quite understanding, like, did a lot of people in the Bay Area even care? And Clark's like, no one gave a shit. They've been faking the move for like 5 straight years. I mean, that they've had the final game at the Coliseum for 3 straight years. You can only cry wolf so many times before someone doesn't come to help you. Finally, the wolf's there and you get eaten. You know, yeah, just you create apathy and just it's hard to maintain incredible emotions. Now, some people there had them. But just on the whole, if you would have asked like people watching the Raider game, the casual person around the Bay Area, I didn't think most people knew that was the final game of the Coliseum. No one cares. It's their own fault. Do you want to be in an NFL bracket pool? Question mark. It's similar to March Madness, but for NFL. I think this should get more popular, and I've been running one for a few years. Just let me know. I'll send everything out, and you just have to fill one out and send it back. Text or email is fine. $15 entry. You can invite anyone else should be interested. Another question that is clearly not a mailbag, Middlecoff mailbag question. But this is not a terrible idea to do a little playoff. Maybe we could do a three and out playoff bracket. That's not a terrible idea at all. I might have to look into that. This guy sparked a little, get my mind humming. I like that. How does Lane Kiffin keep failing up? How would any school parent trust him to lead a program or trusted with a young man's future? That's a pretty good question. You know, his last name certainly doesn't hurt. I think what he did the last 3 years at FAU, I mean, two of the years they've won double-digit games. They're playing in a bowl game this weekend. He does have a long history of calling plays and being a dynamic offensive mind. I think I've said it before on this podcast. I watched his press conference when he got hired at Ole Miss. He sounded like a new guy. He really did. And I think he's matured. You know, I don't think most parents, when their kid's getting recruited, the majority of them don't know that much about, you know, colleges and coaches. They're just open-minded and humans, and they're, you know, impacted by people that you can be faked out. You know, if someone can just, if you can sell, which a lot of college football coaches have to be able to sell, you just believe them. You know, I think a lot of people get fooled. Most kids that are being recruited, their dad didn't play in the NFL. Their parents didn't play college football. So they don't know. So if you just meet Lane Kiffin and he smiles and he shows you his resume, you think, wow, Lane freaking Kiffin. This guy worked for Nick Saban and Pete Carroll, and he's been a head coach a bunch of places. This guy's young, he's got a big smile, and he's tall. I almost called him skinny, but he's put on some LBs. I just think you don't know what you don't even know. It's just awesome to see guys come through. This guy's from the SEC. He wants my kid to go there. Boosters are willing to, you know, transfer a little cash into the savings account. You don't know what you don't even know. How he keeps failing up, Jimmy Sexton's his agent. So when you got Jimmy on your side, you're in pretty good shape. Appreciate everyone listening. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the Saturday and Sunday, and then even leading up to Monday, NFL. Look forward to talking to everyone next week. And so I don't even need to say Happy Hanukkah or Merry Christmas, because I'll see you next week. Enjoy the games. Thanks for listening. Tell all your friends. Peace.